Your dreams are bigger, bolder, and more badass than the life you're living now, but something just keeps getting in the way. Join certified coach and former therapist Diane Wingert for the Driven Woman podcast. She'll show you how to get rid of whatever is holding you back so you can stop spinning your wheels and up-level your life. Get ready to hop in and buckle up. This is the Driven Woman podcast, and we're heading for the fast lane.
Hey there, and welcome back, Driven Woman. You know, I don't often get to work with clients who are at the very beginning of their entrepreneurial journey, but it is really exciting for me when I do. When I first heard from Danielle Métiv, a scientist turned health coach, she was just a few months into her brand new business. Now, Danielle is a woman in her 50s, and you would not believe where she built an audience of over 150,000 people in just a few short months. TikTok. Yeah, TikTok. Over the 3 months that Danielle and I worked together, we clarified her audience, her offer, her business model, her marketing platform, her social media, and her long-term goal of thought leadership in what she believes will be the next wave of healthcare. Hey, when you get to coach someone as smart as Danielle, someone who has so much bandwidth, so much energy, and so much desire, the hardest part can be getting them to accept that they're doing too much. One of the key concepts in my coach approach is intentional constraint. And I think it made a huge difference for Danielle. We narrowed down everything she was doing and laser focused it all the way through to her goal. I'm really excited to share this inspiring woman with you and our conversation about our work together and the outcome we co-created. So lean in and enjoy our latest client success story, Danielle Métiv. Today, we are joined by one of my favorite clients, Danielle Métiv. Danielle is a health coach who has a very, very interesting story and is doing so many things brilliantly. Most of the clients that I work with already have a business that is already in motion when I get involved. This experience has been unique in many ways, but for one of them, Danielle is just getting started. So we were able to put things in place to get her business focused, fired up, and flame retardant from the get-go. And I can't wait to share all the details. Welcome, Danielle.
Thanks. I'm really happy to be here.
So you are 52. And this is your first entrepreneurial venture. And I just want to highlight that right from the get-go, because so many women want to start a business, but they think, I'm too old. I should have done it when I was younger. It's too late. There's too many other people doing this. And it's just not true, is it?
No, definitely not. I mean, it's never too late. And yeah, there's always room for you in the entrepreneur space.
Absolutely. So let's tell our listeners a little bit about your backstory, because this is not your first rodeo. You've had several careers and done some very interesting things in your life. And I think it will help shape the context for the business that you are now creating. So what would you like to share?
Well, my original background is as an oceanographer. I have a master's degree in oceanography and in a degree in marine policy. And I spent the first 20 plus years of my career working for like federal government, nonprofits, various agencies on climate and environmental policy. So completely different universe from the one I'm in, but still both then and now I use my science background. I've always been passionate about science and communicating science. So that's really the thread that runs through the whole, my entire career.
One of the things
So that was my initial career.
Okay. And then one of the things that we know is that you are no stranger to the limelight. And I think it has absolutely served you well in your current business, which we are going to talk a lot about: visibility, vulnerability, comfort with being seen, and how that has literally made your business blow up. But you didn't intend to be in the public eye, but a few years ago, you were. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Yes. So in 2015, when my children were 10 and 6, my husband and I let them walk home from the playground by themselves, you know, a local playground, and somebody helpfully called the police. And they were picked up by the police, and it started a whole CPS case because they said, this is child neglect. You can't let your children walk home from a playground in broad daylight in a safe neighborhood. And it became an entire national and international story. And I was known as the free range mom. And it went on for 6 months, and you know, we were on every media outlet in the world practically, and we were charged with child neglect, and we actually had to fight it, and more news stories and more drama. And then finally we not only were the charges dropped, but we actually changed policy in my home state of Maryland, and as well as a number of different states around the country have changed laws so that wouldn't happen to anybody else.
I mean, talking about turning lemons into lemonade, but I remember when you and I first met on the consult and we were considering working together, and I'm like, wait a minute, I've seen this lady before. I've heard her name before. And of course, I had to Google you, and I'm like, oh, she's the free range mom lady. And I had never, before I saw that story, Danielle, I had never even heard that term before. But of course, once I did, it was like everywhere. And I remember thinking at the time, my kids are quite a bit older than yours, thinking they literally just walked home in broad daylight. A 6-year-old and a 10-year-old who knew the way were totally safe, and some busybody got involved. But I think it's a good example of how you are a person who has very strong values, and you will fight for what you think is right. You will speak up for what you think is right. And I think that is something that serves you very well now. So let's talk about now. What are you doing now? Tell us about your business.
So in my mid-40s, I decided to completely pivot. I loved the policy that I was doing, but I was kind of done with that kind of more abstract policy wonk world in Washington, D.C. So I decided to pivot, and I got I've always been fascinated with health, my own family's health issues, and sort of what we can do for our own health, so taking charge of your own well-being. And so I got a health coaching certification. And part of what drove my interest for ages is that I have Hashimoto's, which is an autoimmune thyroid disorder. My aunt had multiple sclerosis. My mom had Graves' disease, which is also thyroid. So there's, you know, there's a lot of these issues in my family, and I learned how to heal myself. So with the help of both conventional and functional medicine. So I decided to go into that and work with other women who had this issue, because thyroid issues, especially autoimmune issues, are just incredibly common. Hypothyroidism, Hashimoto's, Graves' disease, and all these things, unbelievably common. And so that's what I decided to use my experience and my science background to create a business around that.
And not only are they extremely common, but the conventional medical world is oftentimes dismissive of women who have thyroid disorders. The thyroid panels they typically do are just skimming the tip of the iceberg. And I think, unfortunately, it does happen to be so many autoimmune conditions tend to disproportionately affect women who tend to be dismissed by medical providers as, you know, hysterical is, I mean, they used to treat hysteria in women back in the dark ages of medicine with some very barbaric sorts of things. So what is the name of your business?
So my business is Thyroid Healing Solutions. And I work with women for just the reasons you mentioned, because so many women are dismissed. There's so much gaslighting of conditions that disproportionately affect women. Autoimmune diseases often have very non-specific symptoms, fatigue, headaches, and all this. Since literally the word hysteria was invented, you know, 2,000 years ago by the Greek, women have been dismissed as hypochondriacs, as just that something about being female just makes us, you know, imagine that we're sick. And this still happens today. You know, for 2,000 years, we've been suffering this way. And so we talk about health coach, health educator. The way I often think of myself, which of course ties into the whole free range mom thing, is really health champion, is really standing up and speaking up for myself and others in this way so we can change healthcare, because the way women are treated is completely unacceptable and just basic misogyny.
I love this. And I personally think, and I believe you would agree, Danielle, that entrepreneurship is fundamentally a feminist act, because when a woman takes control of her financial destiny by starting her own business, and one as audacious as yours, where you're not exactly giving the middle finger to the medical establishment, but you are shining a ginormous flashlight at their biases and their ignorance, at least with respect to this issue. You've done it in a way that I think I, when we first met, I was like, wow, you go, girl. Because most women in our age group generally will say, well, I'm going to start a blog. I'm going to blog about this. I'm like, it's going to be 15 years from Sunday and you're still going to be looking for your first client. Why don't we think about some more modern forms of media where you can grow faster? And the answer always comes back, oh, you know, here's the thing. I really do want to help as many people as I can, but I really have a hard time putting myself out there. You, my friend, do not have that problem. You went direct to the platform that you don't see a lot of women in their 50s on, TikTok. And it's the most fascinating story. Tell us when you started your TikTok channel, how often you post, all the deets, and what the size of your audience is on TikTok now.
So I started on TikTok at the very, very end. I started my account in the end of January of this year. So I don't know, January 20 something. And I started because somebody else, took this business class and somebody said, oh, you know, there's another coach, this woman doing it. You should check her out. She's on TikTok. And I was like, that's my daughter does dance videos. My 13-year-old, like, what is that? Literally all I knew about TikTok was some fight that, you know, the former president of China had over it and children do videos. Like, that's all I knew about TikTok. But I was like, okay, I'll check it out. So I still remember Super Bowl Sunday, which was like, February 7th. I had 60 followers, 6-0.
6-0.
Because I was talking to my brother all about 6-0, right, about it. And then by the end of that week, I had 5,000 followers. And I was like, wow, I'm on Instagram. I have been on Instagram since then. I have like 1,200, maybe. Like, I get like 2 a week. It's like crawling up there.
Yes.
And then by like end of March, I had 22,000 followers. And then I posted a video. Now, you do not have to dance on TikTok. Very clear.
Yeah, let's talk about specifically, because these numbers are like defy description. Like, people's mouths are hanging open right now. What kind of content did you start doing in the beginning where you went from zero to 60 and then 60 to 5,000 and so forth? How often were you posting? Like, and what was the content that people were just grabbing a hold of and it just kept going?
Yeah. So it's funny because, you know, people think of like, there's like all these stars and celebrities and they do dances and they're like, great, that's their part. That's their side of TikTok. I was literally getting up there and saying things like, you know, stupid ass things that doctors tell women with hypothyroidism, you know, that's doing TSH or not doing a full panel or, you know, all these things. And people really like that. So I said, okay, stupid ass things doctors tell hypothyroid women, part two, part three, you know. And I was like, woohoo, look at this.
The sequel.
Returns. And so it was things like that. It was things like, here's my spa water that I drink with a pinch of salt. And, you know, I do strength training, not cardio. I mean, literally talking to the camera for 60 seconds. So you get, when I started with TikTok, you could just do up to 60 seconds.
Yes.
And that's what most of it was. It was just,
sharing little tips and details about your life
in a nerdy way, like in a whole, like, you know, you need to have better electrolytes. So therefore we have the magnesium. Like, I don't filter. I speak like a nerd all the time.
Well, you are a nerd. You know,
I'm total nerd. No, that's exactly. I'm totally a science nerd. Like, all of these are like all my books, science books about, you know. And so I would talk to people. I'm like, well, there's a recent study that came out that talks about, you know, that. And then there's also something on TikTok that have these little memes. And that's where kind of the music comes in. You do not have to learn a fancy dance. And it's kind of, they're funny. It's kind of like, you know, when you see something on Facebook, there'll be like a picture and people put their words over the picture.
Yes.
But the picture itself is the meme. Mm-hmm. That's what it is on TikTok. Instead of sending me a picture, it's music. So there'll be like a little bit of a like Kelly Clarkson song that you lip sync to. And I may be like dancing, but not doing, literally looking silly, being like doing my little silly, like being authentic. That's the point. And put my content over it.
Yes.
So on April 2nd, I still remember we drove, came back 6 hours in the car, you know, coming back, my in-laws were all tired. And I'm like, I haven't really posted on TikTok this week. I do have this little video of me lip syncing to Kelly Clarkson, singing, you know, I don't need you to lower the bar for me. I wasn't singing it. She was.
I've seen that one of yours. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And I'm literally just being like, I know I'm Superwoman, you know, doing something ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And over it, I put, you know, I had autoimmune thyroid disorder. I was dismissed by the doctors, you know, so I had to heal my, I used my science background and, you know, to learn everything I could about this. And I changed my diet from this, you know, I was vegetarian, then I became paleo. I started doing strength training, whatever, you know, just all that just said literally in, you know, 40 seconds, what, I don't even know how, about how long it is, but, you know, here's what I did. Here's what I did. Here's what I did. And now I do it for other people. You know, now I want to teach others. That's it. That was like the whole video. And I literally did it at 7 o'clock on a Friday going, well, I better upload something. That video went viral and it has almost 1 million views at this point. And that's, who knew that the world was waiting for me to lip sync to Kelly Clarkson and talk about thyroid health. This is the things, how TikTok works. Who knows? And between April and June, I gained 100,000. I went up to 100,000 followers. And right now I was looking at, I'm at 137,300 followers. There is not a single platform that you can grow that fast on except for TikTok.
That is insane. Yeah. And that's, by the way, free.
Yeah, it was crazy. Free. Yeah, I've done, I haven't paid a dime on TikTok.
If you are not already on TikTok, it's free, organic social media growth. Literally from January to October, you've grown this. And here's the thing. This is not just vanity metrics. This is...
No, that's my reach. I mean, I'm actually get my clients from there.
So let's talk about the business model, because most women who want to start a business, especially those first time business owner after 50, they're like, okay, I want to jump on this bandwagon. I want to be a female over 50 business owner. But I don't know what kind of business, and I don't know who I want to serve or what I want to sell, or I don't even know if I can do this. I just don't have any good ideas. I know how to do things. I've been successful in corporate or nonprofit or academia, but I just don't have any good ideas. You, my friend, you and I, not your problem. You have the opposite problem. You have so many good ideas that one of the most important things we did, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a few minutes, was creating intentional constraint at every single area of your business so that it could move forward, because no shortage of good ideas, and you've got the kind of brain that thinks I can do them all at the same time. Why not? And I think that that tendency, Danielle, to just have an idea and execute on it, have another idea and execute on it. I think that's one of the things that has made you so successful on TikTok so quickly. You don't overthink. You get an idea and you're like, what the hell? I'll give it a try. You put it out there. Some of them land. Some of them don't land as well. And you're like, I wonder what they liked about that one. Let's do a similar one and change it, which is exactly the kind of beginner's mind experimental approach. And I think the fact that you are a science nerd, like, experiments are what you live for. So I think you've done that so incredibly well. Now, you've got all these followers. What have you done with them? Where did you take them from there?
So what I started doing, and this is, I think, the reason why I became so successful is I started by giving something away. And a lot of people, so, you know, I came up with a 5-day challenge, and I ran it live the first time. I had 35 people in it. And the challenge was I had a booklet with like 5 days worth of meal plans or of recipes and meal plan and like a few pages of like, this is what thyroid disorders are like. This is why we need to change our diet in order to heal. And here's what you're going to do. You're going to eat this way for 5 days. And they get an email from me each morning. And I did a few Facebook lives during the week.
And this is not on TikTok, right?
No,
you
so
took
that,
them,
to
the, right. You met them on TikTok and you took them to the challenge.
Right. Exactly. So I met them on TikTok and then I got their email address. I said, if you want to sign up for my challenge, click here. And then they got this little booklet to download. And then they got an email from me each day. So that's when I did it for, I got 35 people the first time I did it. Then I kept the link there. It's still instead of it being a live challenge, it's now you can have this guide.
Evergreen.
I'm not running it live. The guide is still there. It's evergreen. Exactly.
Yeah.
So people can still download it. So that's how I get them from TikTok onto my mailing list.
Awesome.
Then I ran it again live in March, and there were 750 people in it. And then I ran it again in May, and then again just last week, and there were 3,200 people in it each time.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And because I talk about it on TikTok, I send it out now to my mailing list, which has 12,000 people on it at this point.
Yay.
Yeah, exactly. And so what I do on TikTok, but the key, I think, is that evergreen. I mean, it's great to run the challenge live. People love it. It's really fun. Mm-hmm. But the evergreen freebie is just so key because I'm giving something away. And people say, oh, what if you, I want to give away your best ideas. You can't mm-hmm. give away your best material. It's literally impossible because what people actually want from me is me. I can't
they
give
want
that
you.
PDF.
That's your best material.
You. That's it. It's, mm-hmm. I mean, and that's why TikTok works so well because for somebody who's educating, coaching, you know, anything in that space, your work is a relationship. You literally have a relationship with your
yes.
students, clients, customers. And on TikTok, they can get a preview of that relationship. They literally say, do I like this person's voice? Do I like the way they speak? Do they speak a language that resonates with me? If not, they'll just go to the next video. But if so, and I do TikTok lives. I did one for 2 hours yesterday, and it's just I sit there and answer questions. People are like, oh, I'm so glad I'm on your live. I love listening to you speak. And I'm like, about thyroid hormones. Like, this is not like, I'm like, thanks. This is great. But it's because people feel like they have a personal relationship with me because I am standing in front of the camera talking to them about my journey. Also, I've been dismissed by doctors. I have had miscarriages. I have lost, you know, hair. I have been, you know, exhausted. Like, I've had all of those experiences and now I'm on the other side of it. So I'm giving them hope by sharing my journey.
Well, one of the things you give people is hope. Yeah. But also, and sometimes it's like, I can't believe they, you know, want to hang out with me for 2 hours and talk about thyroid. But I think you are also another excellent example of why certain people become so successful as health coaches. Because number one, you give people hope because you are further along the journey than they are. And it's paid off. And they can get there faster because you're sharing what you've learned with a significant investment of your time, energy, effort. I mean, you do deep dives on everything because you're a science nerd, but your audience doesn't need to be science nerds because you've done the work for them. And now you can give them the quick path to the results that you've produced for yourself. But I think one of the other things, and you're right, you can't give your best content away. There's no shortage of information in the world. There are, I don't know how many thousands of millions, probably new pieces of information are added to the interwebs and social media streams every single day. There's no shortage of information. What there is a shortage of is genuine, authentic people who are not trying to scam you, who are saying, I know the pain you're in. I know how lonely and helpless and frustrated and pissed off you feel, and I can help you. And it really, right. really comes across. I mean, the accelerant of TikTok in terms of that know, like, and trust factor, they're not just reading your words on a page or hearing your voice on a podcast. They actually, as you say, they're getting a taste of what it would be like to be in relationship with you and for you to be their guide. One of the things I know that we did in our work together was identify your specific role because you were using like, am I a coach? You were calling yourself a coach, a consultant, a teacher, a guide, a Sherpa, a mentor, and you just used a new word mm-hmm. today, champion. And one of the things we did was clarify what your actual role is a teacher, not a coach. And the path you're on is that of the thought leader. And I think that was really an important part of the work because as a coach, there's I don't know how many other health coaches there are, even ones that are extremely qualified like you. It's easier to get lost in the herd, but the path of a thought leader is different. Do you want to speak a little bit about how the meaning of that for you and how it's shifted the way you're shaping your business and frankly, what you expect of yourself in it?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's true. We first talked about coach and I started off as a coach and I'm glad I did. You know, it got me clients and I started understanding kind of this world. But I realized that the difference, I mean, a coach is somebody who's about the behavioral change and, you know, the one who kind of cheers you on from the sidelines of the game, and you know, all those metaphors. And that's incredibly important. There's no question that that's important, but I realized that wasn't what I was uniquely providing. And it's like I said, the thread that has run through my entire career and my passion is what I literally described. I remember, I think, applying to graduate school or applying for a fellowship in graduate school is I love to make science interesting, accessible, and relevant to people who don't have that background. So How do I take the healing journey, all the science I've learned, and make it interesting, accessible, and relevant so people can actually act on it? And that's not necessarily the coach. That is, you know, I'm interpreting, I am, you know, providing information but making it useful. So it's a translation in a sense, and making it more useful. And for me, it also means, like I said, champion. I realize I absolutely want to change people's lives. I want to have a huge impact. But for me, it's, I want to help as many people as possible. And being a coach, there's just not enough hours in the day or enough you know, mental and emotional energy to do it one individual at a time. Again, like, you know, all respect to people who do that. That's fantastic. I just realized that wasn't necessarily the best use of my energy. I know that I'm comfortable speaking one to many. Mm-hmm. And that I have a certain energy and ability that doesn't come out as much one-to-one. So in terms of the thought leader, I want to change healthcare. Like, I used to work in environmental stuff and I wanted to change the world that way. Now I still have that passion. I want to change the world a different way. So for me, it is reaching so enough people, changing their lives. And as we've talked about, each one of them being a foot soldier in this struggle to change healthcare, because it's, I mean, we're dying. Like, the United States has the worst health outcomes and yet pays the most money of any of the wealthiest countries in the world. Like, it's horrible, and women get even a worse end of that. So for me, realizing that for me personally, being a coach would have been playing on a smaller field than what I know I needed to play on in order to have the impact and make the change I wanted to do. So I needed to change my vision in that way. To a much scarier one. Thought leader, what the heck is that?
Of course. But you know, Danielle, it makes the most sense, because when you think about your life journey, like, you love studying very technical topics, scientific topics, and then breaking it down and making it, as you say, accessible and relevant for people who don't have the science background. But you are also a person whose values are a commitment to change at a very high level, and the ability to impact as many people with that change as possible. You did it in your first career. You did it with Free Range Mom. It wasn't enough for you to have the DCFS case resolved and for your neighbors, you know, to no longer think of you as a potential child neglector, but you actually got the law changed in your community and brought national, if not international, attention to a very important topic in parenting. We all know about the helicopter parenting. And I can tell you from a mental health perspective, there are millions of highly anxious kids as a result of that. You like creating change on a big level. And I do agree that, you know, being a coach, and you still are coaching, but the way we reshaped your vision of your business and your role in it to be not the coach, but the teacher, and not just the teacher, but the leader, and not just the leader, but the thought leader, that actually positions you to help as many people as possible by leveraging your strengths. One of the other things we spent a lot of time on was identifying the differences between zone of excellence and zone of genius. And I think someone like you, and frankly, someone like me, who has the capacity to be good at a lot of different things and is very stimulated by variety and by, you know, a lot of moving parts and a lot of different roles, that actually holds us back if what we want is to create impact on a high level. So You needed to start eliminating, and this is so hard for so many people to hear and harder to do, but you actually had to identify and commit to eliminating things that you're actually very good at. Let's talk about that for a bit. Hey, Driven Woman, I want to thank you for listening to this podcast.
Maybe you've been listening to it from the beginning, or maybe you are a brand new listener, but either way, I am so glad you're here. And I hope that you are being inspired and motivated and actually learning how to move your life forward with each and every episode you hear. But I want you to know that there is a whole other level that is so much more powerful, and that is actually working with me. I want to invite you to consider that this fall 2021, is your time. I'm reintroducing my group coaching program. It'll be a small group experience that I will carefully curate by choosing the just right members. You might be one of them. To get on the interest list, click on the link in the show notes. There's no obligation, but you won't be able to hear the details unless you get on the list. Okay? So it's coming soon. I want to make sure that you learn everything you want to know to make the right choice for you. Now, if one-on-one is the only way for you to go, there's a link for that too. That starts with a free consultation to make sure that I'm the right coach for the right reason at the right time for you. But if group is more your jam, you got to get on the list. You want to hear from one of my other clients and what she felt about working with me? Have a listen to this.
I adopted this phrase of, this is what we do here. Instead of trying to make it, like for the longest time, I was trying to make it fit everybody's need, where you were attracted.
Yes.
So that was, I think, the struggle bus. And I don't think I was aware that I was, just because I love people. And when you have potential, I can help you get there. So I think I was allowing too much wiggle. And that's what you helped me through, mostly in my memory of like figuring out that it's okay to say, no, this is what we do here. This is that stance. And that's how Beyond Common, you know, 12 Essentials for Success in Life, it finally was completed. It was just like this pieces and parts of things that we had done that worked to make us successful. But it was like through that figuring out how to connect everything. And definitely your influence helped me so much. Like it was like, you know, you're an angel.
Yeah, that was a really big one. And I know it took like a number of conversations for me to really wrap my head around it. And that was the shift from coach to thought leader. And or that more teacher mode is to recognize, I mean, I do, in you know, I'm good at the coaching. I enjoy it. I was doing these one-on-one consultations, these sort of strategy sessions, or because so many people get all this information from their doctor and they don't know how to try interpret it. So they want to be like, oh, I just want to do a session with you and you can walk me through it. And I'm good at that. And I do enjoy it. It's, you know, that I can help people in that one-on-one session, but it wasn't having the same impact because I was just talking to them once, or even if we were coaching and I was seeing them every other week. How many individuals can you talk to in terms of, you know, I mean, I had like 20 clients on my roster. It's still 20 people as opposed to I ran a group coaching program that had 20, the first time I did it had 26 people in it. So like literally the same amount of time, but all 26 people, you know, at the same amount of time it would have taken for one. And when I do a challenge, it has over 3,000 people in it, you know, and I've touched all those lives. So I did have to really wrap my head around the fact that I am, you know, I got good at coaching pretty quickly and, you know how to talk to people and they really get a lot out of that one-on-one, but that it just wasn't, there aren't enough hours in the day for that. And I wasn't going to be able to have the impact. And also, and I think one thing that was, you know, for people like us, that was hard is not only am I good at it and a lot of people want it, but you get a lot of positive reinforcement for it. No, this is, I mean, it's great, right? Pushes that button. You're like, ooh,
yes.
People love it. And so it's like, you know, the gifted child who gets, oh, I got an A, you know, teacher's really happy with that. I thought it was a boring ass assignment, but yay, I did it, you know. So going, okay, you know what? Just, and then there was, you know, I think all the time, and I've said it, you know, since we started working together, I've said it a dozen times to different people. Because you can doesn't mean you should. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. You know, and it's, and that's the zone of excellence. My husband and I have had this whole conversation because he's just launched a startup with two colleagues. And we're talking about, you know, we were talking about, so what's your zone of excellence and what's your zone of genius? And he's like, huh, you're right. This is my zone of genius, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's a different world to say, I'm going to spend as much time as I can in that. I mean, it's not like you necessarily could drop everything overnight. You know, the bills still have to be paid and somebody needs to clean the bathroom, but, or at least make sure somebody does clean the bathroom.
The delegating piece. That's another. Yep.
Right. Right. Exactly. But that idea of there are things, and you almost feel guilty for it. First, I was like, but this is too much fun. Like, you mean I could spend all my time just doing this? Like, I could spend all my time making TikTok videos? Like, really? I could spend all my time, like, but this is easy. So, and that's when you would, of course, know that you're in the zone of genius, because it's super, everybody goes, how did you do that? And I'm like, I don't know. I just did it.
Yeah. Yes, because it comes so naturally to you, and you don't even realize that it's a talent or a gift because you didn't have to work for it. But everyone has those things. And I think it's so fascinating that, you know, we've all been culturally conditioned to think if you're being paid to do something, it needs to feel like work. It needs to be hard work. The reality is the thing that your most unique contribution in the world, the highest value zone of genius contribution you can make in this world, and if you're lucky, you can create a business around, is the thing that comes most naturally to you. Mm-hmm. You probably wouldn't be surprised how many women I have coached on accepting that has value, even though it isn't hard work. It's really such a fascinating thing. But you are such a good student and so fun to coach because you, first of all, you're a verbal processor like I am. So lots of times I could almost sit back and just let you process something. You also happen to be married to someone who also is very involved and likes to listen to you talk things through. So you had me as a sounding board, you had your husband as a sounding board. And by the time you had worked something through, you knew what you wanted to do, and then you went right into action. And I think that's another thing it's really fun for me to work with someone who is willing to take action pretty quickly as soon as they've figured something out. And you may think of yourself as a perfectionist, but you were willing to experiment with things and then make them better as you went along. And that's one of the other things I think really, really holds people back is they don't want to put it out there until it's already right. But I strongly believe that it gets right by you putting it out there and seeing what happens with it. But you're so absolutely right. When people are asking for something from you, they are offering money to pay you to help them. And it's enjoyable to you because you're good at it, but you know it's not your highest and best. Like, that's hard to say no and to walk away from it. Did you have any difficulty with that at all? It seemed like it happened pretty quickly, but I don't know if we ever talked about any difficulty or any pushback in terms of setting that boundary. And I don't do that anymore. I don't offer that anymore. And, you know, what was that like for you? Did you have any difficulties in that area?
I mean, there were definitely some, you know, when we talked about, like, I'm not going to take clients, and I was like, okay, that makes sense. But then there's these one-on-one, one-off consultations. Like, those are easy, right? It definitely took me a few weeks to go,
yes,
well, I like talking to people like that. You know, I find it interesting. And so do I need to do those? And I think I needed to go, okay, this is really going to drain, you know, time and energy that could be put towards reaching more people and having even a bigger impact. But also realizing, is that even the best way? Like, you know, so I said, okay, doing one-on-one coaching is at least an ongoing relationship. Am I really doing the best impact? I'm just talking to them once. Like, so I also had to realize, what is my vision for making change? And am I even, like, it's, you know, yeah, I get that feedback. Oh, we feel great. And that, like, you know, the little, you know, reward rush. We love talking to each other for an hour. But I'm like, but a week later, has that person actually changed? So I'm like, yeah. So I had to realize, even though it was fun and easy, it didn't fit in my vision of where I wanted to go. And it was definitely a process of sort of settling on that.
Yes.
And the thing that's interesting you said about the perfectionism is, I think naming that numerous times, going, okay, that's perfectionism. I can say, okay, that's not real. I'm going to put that aside. But that twinge of, oh, I can't do it until it's right. I recognize that. That's perfectionism. I had to sort of name it and recognize that's not real. That's not helpful. That is, you know, you talk all about remnants of childhood trauma and all that good stuff. But it's not, you know, because often in our, you know, type A society, we throw around perfectionism like it's a good thing. And I was like, perfectionism isn't the same, like, I want, you know, as sort of a drive for excellence. Perfectionism is all about self-doubt and I need to be perfect, which nobody can be. So recognizing that helped. And I literally have a quote that I took when I took a business class. I wrote it down and I kept it on my computer. And I don't think I realized just how important it was to remember. And it says, the secret to being an entrepreneur, start before you're ready. And in the act of doing, you'll figure out what you need to know. And I literally put it on my computer day one, because it's sort of the perfect antidote. You cannot be a perfectionist entrepreneur. You'll just never get started. Or somebody, you'll get started and then somebody else will pass you because you're still going, but is that the right color for that font? Right? Like,
yeah.
Do I really care about the color? Or is this just an excuse not to keep going?
Well, I think it's a scheme. It's like what we don't realize. And I lost 2 years before I actually launched this podcast, which I talk about extensively in episode 55, my 1 year podversary. I was doing so much getting ready to launch a podcast that it literally took me 2 years. And you know what finally got me off the fence? It wasn't another course. It wasn't another coach. It wasn't a better mic. It wasn't any of those things. It was setting a date, creating some accountability, and just freaking do it like I had no other choice. And I think that you also work really well with accountability and creating expectations. And I think you're right. Like, as I recall, you didn't think of yourself as a perfectionist. You didn't identify with that label, but the way we will delay doing something until it meets our standards, I think for people who are gifted in any way, that is something we don't necessarily, I'm not a perfectionist. Look at my house. Look at my kids. The dogs haven't had a bath in 6 months. No, it's like, no. It's that your ability to approve of something you've done is withheld until some magical, mythical level has been reached. And, you know, I think one of the things that's so great is that you take action pretty quickly. I want to bring something up that I think was kind of fun. And it was another good example of how you were able to act on feedback really quickly, which made it so fun to work with you, is because you are an information hoarder, just like I am. You love learning like it's your drug of choice. And so but you don't like to waste money. So you would go to the public library, come back with the maximum number of, but you know, this one, come back with the maximum number of books. And then they would sit all competing for your attention with making TikToks, sending emails, caring for your kids, all the other things. And it's like, oh, I'd read a chapter. And they're like, oh, I really need to get back to that. And then of course you make the next trip to the library and you get even more books. So I remember we had a conversation about that.
Yes, I had 47 books out at once.
Yeah, I believe you. I believe you. There's probably a poster with a red circle and a line across it with your face in the back room of the library in your neighborhood. But we did something kind of fun that I was like, it just an idea popped into my head. It was very rewarding. I said, well, you know, you have all those books and there's something about all the things we mean to do sitting around us. They are an energetic drain. They are calling to us. They are vying for our attention. And those things just keep multiplying. That's why so many busy-brained people become hoarders in a way, because especially for books. And a lot of women I work with collect information and collect books, and then they don't read the books, and then they feel guilty. And that's an energetic drain. So I suggested to you, well, have you read a little bit of one of the books? And did you get something out of it? And is it something you can share in a TikTok? And I just saw like light bulb. And the next day when I opened up TikTok, there it was.
Yeah, here's my book. I just read this
you
book.
You made it right away. You did it immediately.
Yeah. And that is actually what I've been doing with, and it's fun because, you know, sometimes I'll get a book from the library. We talked about this, you know, if I'm interested in topic, I'll get 5 books, not because I'm going to read all 5, but I don't know which one I'm going to read. But even the decision, like, oh, I'll get to those 5 books and then decide. I was like, So instead, that's what I did is, and I think we got into that because I said, oh, I take a picture of the spines so that I remember them for the next time. You're like, well, why don't you just share the picture? Because it never occurred to me. But no, I love that. And then, you know, it's and like I said, you know, I'm sharing a book. I'm showing where my information comes from. It's, you know, and then I'll remember it. So someday if I'm like, oh, I really do want to dive deeper into that book. I know exactly what it is because it's in the TikTok video. But it also does feel like you get some value out of that. I got the book.
Yes.
A lot of times we don't need to read a book cover to cover to get the information anyway. You're promoting somebody else's work, which I find always, you know, is a positive thing. So yeah, I really like that. And in fact,
it's networking too, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I've done the same.
It's networking. You can tag the author.
Right. And I can't say how many times in a TikTok live, somebody say, what do you like? And I'm like, oh, I like this book. Like, here it is. And I'll hold it up. I'm like, here, screenshot it. This is a great book. Or here's the book I'm reading right now. Here's my, bedside table, pile, which is actually all going back to the library as soon as I take this picture, because Diane said so. but no, it actually was. It's funny because there is a sense of, I do literally enjoy the act. Sometimes it's like a pleasurable thing to sort of browse in the library, browse in the books. And it was a way to sort of indulge that without taking all the books or home or keeping them for 3 weeks.
Yes.
I was like, I can enjoy the actual activity of, touching the nice books and looking at, without it being like, and now I'm going to keep them for 3 renewals and they'll be sitting on my desk for 4 months and I'll be thinking, so I've actually gotten a lot better going, oh yeah, this is a great set of books. Okay. I need one. The other 5, I will take a picture of the cover for the future or for a TikTok video or for something. And one is actually coming home because this is the one I need to read, or I want to read. I want to stick on my table or whatever. So, that was actually really sort of an in-between, how to use the information and, indulge the enjoyable part of browsing the library without it then being like, oh, well, except now it's a weight around my ankle instead of a fun half an hour in the library during lunch,
Most of the time, I'm extremely direct, as you know. It's a quality we share, and I really like being direct because I find it very efficient. But in this case, I think it maybe was a little sneaky because I think you enjoy learning so much, and you enjoy really doing a deep dive in topics, and you enjoy sharing that information. But in reality, the path you're on, the path we committed to, is the path of the thought leader, which means practicing intentional constraint like it's your religion every day, every moment, ongoing. Because if you have 9 books, the time it will take for you to read all 9 books is time that you could be spending mapping out 9 chapters of your own book or preparing 9 talking points for your future TED Talk or networking with 9 other thought leaders on a summit that you want to create. So I think the idea that you get that dopamine hit from browsing the books, renting the book, bringing it home, and maybe you only read 1 chapter or even 1 paragraph, you get value, you share value. So you've got a little content creation. But I think most importantly, Danielle, is like teaching your brain that the information foraging habit, however pleasurable, is something that actually needs a lot of constraint or it will drain you. And you can leverage it now.
And it's another flavor of perfectionism.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's also another flavor of perfectionism. I need to know more in order to really be good at this. I'm not really an expert. I need to learn everything there is. I need to know what all the other experts know before I can join their ranks. So that also realizing that that's what it was. We also talked about, I started a 3-year program at the School for Applied Functional Medicine, which is a huge deep dive into all kinds of fascinating. And I'm going to get a certification out of that, really in-depth certification. I'm meeting an amazing community of colleagues and so on. And it's a way of constraining, saying, I don't need to get 27 books from the library because I've already put my learning into this box of this certification. This training and this, functional medicine education is so cutting edge that like it's ahead of the books I'm taking out of the library anyway. I keep doing this because I keep books, my library books on the shelf back there, pointing on my shoulder. But so it was also a way of signing up for that. And there's no question that that's, going to advance my career. But it's also when I have an urge to be like, oh, I'll read that book. I'm like, the learning is in the box. Like if I have time to read the book, I'm going to go to the next webinar in my schooling. So it kind of put constraints on the education.
Yes.
Okay, the education goes in this, I'm never going to read a book again, but it was a really deliberate way to say, this book, no, let me just put it in an actual path so that I'm moving towards something, not just reading lots of, interesting, but kind of random books.
Well, it's as you are investing in this education and certification, that is an asset. That certification is an asset. It becomes part of your pedigree. It becomes part of your curriculum vitae. It becomes goes on your website. It's right. It's on your LinkedIn profile. It's part of how people will vet you as a thought leader. Reading a book right. at the library, you're adding to your brain, but it's like, and it's really, you know, just constantly determining of all the things I could do, what is the one I will do? Not should, not must, mm-hmm. not because someone else said so, even Diane, although everybody seems to say, well, because Diane said, it's like, wow, I wish I was really that powerful. But it's like the idea that I could do anything I want. And the fact is, Danielle, you didn't even need to take this functional medicine certification course. Right. You are already qualified. Why? You have a legitimate science background, and you're not just offering yourself as an expert. You're offering yourself as an expert and a person who has real life, real world in this body healing experience from the very condition you're helping people with. I think that's your secret sauce, because you go to a doctor, you're going to get the expert, but they have no idea how you feel. You know exactly how they feel, and you're the expert. And, you know, I think the course and the people that you're meeting in it and all of it add to, but I think the whole certification thing, you know, is a slippery, and I won't be surprised in the future if you're like, oh, so I'm getting this other certification, and be like, okay.
Yeah, well, that's why I also picked this one, because I was like, you know, I'm going to do one. I mean, I knew I was going to do a limited health coaching and then decide what to do next. And like I said, I sort of picked this big one for just that reason, because there's so many out there.
So many.
I was like, you know what? I'm just going to pick one comprehensive one. It's, you know, do it part-time. And again, it was also to deliberately constrain that urge to keep learning.
Yes.
To be like, okay, well, if I want, I mean, which of course I want to have a lifelong habit of learning. I mean, it's, you know, it's constantly great to grow and so on.
But it's you have to. You can't not do that.
Yeah. But to say, how can I channel this desire into something that's going to have a result at the end and kind of where I can see it? And like you said, I don't feel like I need it in that sense of like, oh, I'll be legitimate when I get. Right. I mean, all I have is the health coach certification, and I've done my science background. I already got to, you know, this 140,000 people, and my client roster was completely full until I wound it down. And this is really something I'm doing for me, and sort of the, like you said, the thought, the like, who am I going to meet on mm-hmm. this path and networking and so on. But it is really, you know, it's interesting to realize like things, and I think that's what's also valuable. Little things like, who would think picking up a bunch of books at the library is any habit you want to examine? And no, it's not a bad habit. I mean, it's better than somebody going out and getting drunk, right? Like,
yeah,
right.
For sure.
But is it really, I mean, yeah, this part could be fun, but when did it cross over from like, pick up a novel to relax with in the evening versus, do I have those 10 books because I'm really fascinated by them? Or am I getting those 10 books because there's a part of my brain that thinks I need to know that, you know, that's tapping into that perfectionism. So mm-hmm. it was, you know, and it just never occurred to me to look at the habit like that. And to say, okay, let's think, which part of this, is this just like, oh, this will be fun and interesting, or I'm trying to prove something with this one, kind of prove something
myself. And that's my version of getting nerdy, because as you know, I believe all behavior is habit forming and all behavior serves a function, but most of the time we don't know what that function is. So in this case, the functions that it was supporting are, you love learning, you love to do a deep dive, and you always want to be prepared and you want to be the best. And there's nothing wrong with any of that. But it is not a zone of excellence activity. It's not a leveraged activity. And so can you constrain it intentionally and still get the value from? And let's not even talk about the fact that there's a dopamine hit that every single title is new and shiny and unexplored territory. Yeah. And who knows what untold treasures lie inside these covers, you know?
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with any of it, but I also believe that how you do one thing is how you do all things. So my intention with you was to really show you places in your life where you could choose intentional constraint in service of being a thought leader and in service of leveraging your time and spending as much of it as possible in your zone of genius. So you know that you can apply what we did with that stack of books on your bedside table to countless other areas of your business and life with the same effect. You know, and you're already doing it.
That's exactly. And it is really interesting. Yeah, exactly. It's like sort of thinking of that kind of you know, that where do I constrain it? Where are there things that I can expand? That now that I've constrained this, now there's room for something else that needs to expand.
Exactly. Creating space for something else.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's a really big one also. So I think that is, and also that desire, I realize I've also had more of the space and time to say, oh, okay, instead of taking that, you know, the time, that the perfectionism in this or the goal orientation there, well, how do I sometimes do something fun to fulfill that isn't pulling away from the business? And the example I was using is, I just set this to this crazy endurance event.
I saw that.
Saturday, I just did a 50-mile hike all in one day, which is bananas. I never thought I could do that. But again, it was like, rather than it be sort of that sort of focused energy be diffused, you know, diffused throughout, like, I'm going to go to the library and I'll try this. I'll coach 12 people and it's like, focus your business. And if there's still this like, oh, I want to challenge this to something, go do something fun. Also, like, yes. It doesn't, you know, now I've got all this extra energy. I was like, I got enough energy to walk 50 miles. So it's really, I find helpful. Whereas if you don't focus it, I would have felt like, well, I'm busy all the time because I have all these books to read and I have these 12 people I need to follow with and I need to make TikTok. You know, everything gets like, so I can't.
You squander it. No, you squander it. It just gets dissipated and distributed. Yeah, exactly. And so now it's like when you have so much creativity, so much energy, so much drive, you have to be very focused. Otherwise, it will be squandered. And I always use the analogy like a laser. The energy of a laser, if it's distributed, just kind of goes off into the everywhere. But when it's all gathered together and pointed at a specific thing, it can be a tool for healing. So I think, you know, we really helped you focus and point, and you're still going to be a high energy person. You're still going to be distractible. You're still going to want to do too many things, but then you're going to be able to say, oh yeah, is this my highest and best? Is this in alignment with my goals? And also, I think one of the other areas as we're wrapping up that how I start with all of my clients is identifying what their core values are. Now, some people are like, I thought you were going to help me be more organized and productive. Why are we talking about this? Because the reality is that if you create a business that is not in alignment with the lifestyle that you want, and with the things that are most important to you, at some point, you're going to want to burn it down.
And you're going to sabotage yourself while you do it. I mean, without realizing it.
Inexplicably, you will unconsciously sabotage yourself because you won't want to go deeper into something that you're not loving anymore. So you had some very beautiful plans for your lifestyle. And I think intentionally, not only constraining your time, your energy, your focus, your effort, who you serve, how you serve them, but also creating space for that rich, full, meaningful life that's not just about the business, that's a client success story in my book. So I can't get enough of you. I want everybody to find you on TikTok. If you don't even have TikTok yet, you've got to get the app. You've got to see her stuff. And even if you are not interested in thyroid issues or healing or health, Danielle Maytiv is a very, very good example of the fact that you, woman over 50 who wants to start a business, can get out there and show her face and make it happen, because Danielle is living proof that it's possible. We will include links to everywhere you can be found in the show notes. And do you have a freebie for our listeners that they can link to as well?
Yep. I have the thyroid healing guide, the one that I've done in my challenges.
Fantastic.
That literally thousands of people have used. And in terms of TikTok, people think, oh, it's just for teenagers. There are 2 billion people on TikTok, and hundreds of thousands of them are women over the age of 50. So there's a huge audience of us out there. So you won't be the only one who's not a teenager. There's literally hundreds of thousands of us on this app. And that's why I've been able to be so successful.
And you don't have to dance. Woohoo!
You don't have to dance. No, you don't have to do any dances.
Thank you, Danielle. I am a true fan.
Well, it's been a pleasure. And I'm a fan too.
Yay.
It is mutual.
Awesome. Okay, that's a wrap, guys. Thanks for being here. And Danielle, thank you so much as well. And I'll be watching you on TikTok.
You've been listening to the Driven Woman Podcast with Diane Wingert. Want more straight talk and strategy each week that will take you from spinning to winning? Don't forget to hit subscribe in your podcast player so you won't miss a single episode. Then head on over to the Driven Woman free and private Facebook group community. See you there.